Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the end of the week. It's Friday the 30th of April and this is Game On.
Undefeated and undisputed, Gavin Casey is with us to preview Katie's big fight.
She is the defending undisputed world champion. Her professional record, perfect. 17 fights, 17 victories, six of them coming by way of knockout. She is the 2012 Olympic gold medalist and the two-division world champion, fighting out of and proudly representing Bray, County Wicklow, Ireland. Here is the reigning, defending, undefeated, and undisputed lightweight champion of the world, Katie Taylor.
In football, Vera Power reacts to our World Cup qualifying draw. Plus, we look ahead to Manchester United versus Liverpool.
How necessary do you feel it is to your chances of finishing in the top four to finally win at Old Trafford as a Liverpool manager?
Without winning football games, we will not end up in any kind of European competition. So it's clear. For us, everything is clear. We have to win.
We're just thinking about winning ourselves. If whatever that does to Liverpool, it doesn't matter if we're first or second or third or fourth. Or no matter what, this is a massive, massive game.
Plus, we've Barry Geraghty and live racing from Punterstown on the day when Rachel Blackmore and Honeysuckle picked up where they left off.
But as they race inside the closing stages, she's picking up again, and it's Honeysuckle towards the line, a combination to define a generation. Honeysuckle has won the Irish Paddy Power Punterstown champion hurdle from Sharjah.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. So you heard that Honeysuckle won the champion hurdle. We'll talk to Barry Geraghty about that shortly. But first, let's cross over to Punchestown for the closing stages of the Alana Holmes Champion Novice Hurdle with Richard Pugh.
That one, Geller de Manil and Ashtel Bob is going right up on his outside now to make a race of it. Ganapathy is trying to go with them, and Golo's just that couple of lengths behind them as they go towards the flight before the turn in. Geller de Manil and towards the outside, Ashtel Bob. Ganapathy's back in third. Now they race towards home. And it's Geller de Manil. Ashtel Bob is being asked to try and go with this leader, who goes a fraction better now. Back in third is Ganapathy, and it's Geller de Manil with Ashtel Bob just trying to hang on to him now on the outside. Ganapathy third, and they've quickly drawn clear from N'Golo as they straighten up Geller de Manil. But Ashtel Bob is going to put it to him if he can on the near side. Ganapathy's a couple of lengths down, but it's Geller de Manil from Ashtel Bob, who's game on the near side. Back in third, Ganapathy's trying to come back at them now, and it's Geller de Manil from Ashtel Bob and Ganapathy. Geller de Manil has forged an advantage of a couple to the final flight. Geller de Manil from Ashtel Bob in second. Ganapathy pitched and he's down, and Geller de Manil is being pushed out towards the line. He's a couple clear from Ashtel Bob and up towards the line. Winner 100 for the champion jockey Paul Townend takes the Alana Holmes Champion Novice Hurdle on Geller de Manil. In second is Ashtel Bob, in third is N'Golo, and it's just the three to finish. And just waiting to see, Brian Cooper looks almost set to get to his feet from Ganapathy. Don't think it's long before he'll be up. And it goes the way of Geller de Manil.
It does go the way of Geller de Manil. And Barry Geraghty joins us now. Barry, what were your thoughts on that? There was a bit of drama at the end there.
There was indeed. It was a good finish, though, and probably a better finish than the prices would have suggested. Geller de Manil was a very sharp price. He was nearly 1-2, and Ashtel Bob was about 3-1 against. So Ashtel Bob ran him close, though, and he Geller de Manil, he had to work hard to get the better of him.
And another winner for Paul Townend.
Another winner for Paul Townend and Willie Mullins. Paul Townend 100 for the season, so he's a jockey's title sewn up. But Rachel copped off her season with her 100 winner, including England and Ireland, earlier on Honeysuckle, which was brilliant as well.
Barry, it really was brilliant. Magic is what it was described afterwards. The two of them, they're just the complete package, really, aren't they?
They are. They're two amazing females. Rachel, brilliant rider, has just brought it to the next level. With all her success in Cheltenham Trade, 6 winners at the festival, and then to follow up and win the English Grand National. It doesn't get any better. It doesn't get any bigger. It was amazing for her. But she just keeps doing everything right. And she gave Honeysuckle a brilliant ride today. And it was hard enough work for her because there was a lot of pace on. She didn't get to dictate or dominate as she can do on softer ground when things are a little bit slower. She can get to dominate, but she wasn't able to today because they were going a fast pace. She worked from the rear of the field, if you like, and worked into a good position. She flew the second last, and probably got racing a little bit early and just got a little bit lonely going to the last hurdle and was waiting for the runner-up, Sharjah. And when Sharjah came to her, she went on again. So there was a little bit of an anxious moment for everyone at the last hurdle, but she was good at the line.
She said actually afterwards that she was relieved because she felt like she nearly threw it away. But look, everybody was making the point, Barry, but when you have a horse like Honeysuckle, they're the ones that will help you deal with making that little bit of a stumble and get you to the line, because they're such a good horse.
Exactly, and Rachel, she knows she probably went a little bit sooner than ideal, and if she was to do it again, she wouldn't have stretched as early in the straight. But good horses do get you out of trouble, and it's so true, and she was delighted to have Honeysuckle, as good as she was, to get her out of that little bit of trouble. And she was probably, it was a little bit exaggerated, because she did, she was slow at the last, which just lost momentum, but she got running again when she needed her.
Barry, we always chat about it. In sport, we love athletes that find a way, and Ruby always reminds us horses are athletes, and that's what she did at the last. She found a way to get over after a long season.
She did, exactly, and she's had a long season and a busy spring especially, and you know, you're going into a meeting like this, having been peaked for Cheltenham, put in a massive performance there, and then she's to be peaked again for this meeting, and she probably just, the freshness wasn't there. So she was probably getting a little bit lonely in front, say, going to the last. And she, when she was needed, though, she went into reserves and she went again.
And what a year it has been for both herself and Henry. Just mind-blowing, really, when you look back on it. And I'd say when she takes a breath and takes a little bit of a break and actually processes everything that's happened this year, it'll actually probably be difficult to process because so much has happened.
I'd say so. I'd say she won't have this process for years. To have done all that she has done, the six winners at Cheltenham and the English Grand National, it doesn't get any better. You know, she's come from humble beginnings. She's turned professional a few years ago. She's worked hard, and she's kept improving and kept improving the quality of horses she's been getting on. Everything has just been an upward curve, but it has been a lot of hard work. She's taken a lot of heavy falls. She's bounced back from injuries. It hasn't been straightforward. It has just been hard work all the way through, and she's reaping the rewards now.
Barry, is there a moment that stands out for you? Like, we look at the overall season and just how incredible it's been, but, you know, with your trained eye, was there a moment that you said, yeah, that's where Rachel shows she's different?
Well, I suppose Cheltenham, all of our winners, and they were, I suppose there was the variety of riding styles. Honeysuckle was very straightforward. She kept it simple. She was the same on others. But the bumper, she dictated the pace from the front. She went a steady pace in front and quickened at the right time, which was a really judged ride. Then she rode Alaho on the Ryanair, where she went a blistering pace all the way. She threw caution to the wind. She let him fly, let him roll. So there were very different rides. And then to go for the English Grand National, which is the ultimate test of horse and rider. And she showed, you know, brilliant horsemanship through the race, but great timing, great judgment, great feel. And she was the all-rounder. She put it all together for that. So you would have to say the Grand National is the one that you want on your CV more than any. So that was probably the one for the season. But she showed an array of talent at Cheltenham.
She certainly gave us lots of exciting moments. So let's have a look ahead to tomorrow, because there is racing in Punchestown again. So Barry, the Coolmore Kew Gardens Irish EBF Mare's Champion Hurdle, is it Concertistas to lose?
I think so. A lot of people disappointed that she got beaten in Cheltenham, but the Coluntra trained mare, Black Tears, Jack Kennedy gave her a brilliant ride to get her up to win. Now, she doesn't, Concertista doesn't face her to tomorrow, but she has a tongue-tie fitter for the first time, which just might suggest that she had a little wind issue. She was a weak finisher at Cheltenham, Concertista, weaker than she has been in the past, so maybe there was a little wind issue there. She has the tongue-tie, that should help her, but the opposition doesn't look as strong, so she should be hard to beat.
And in the Ballymore Champion 4-year-old hurdle, Quilixius and Zanna here, are they the two to keep an eye on?
They would be, but you also have the Willie Mullins trained horse, Height on Colours, I think he's called, who was third at Cheltenham. Zanahir was fourth and Kilixios won it. For me, Zanahir, I've been fortunate enough to have ridden Zanahir a lot of his work. I've ridden Kilixios some of his work as well. And Zanahir, just, he didn't settle at Cheltenham. He pulled hard all the way. And I think if he settles tomorrow, which I think he should do, he might just reverse the placings with Kilixios and the Willie Mullins contender. So I'm sweetening Zanahir to reverse the form.
Well, you know better than us anyway. Barry Geraghty, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back talking rugby.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
I think you see in the games how difficult they make it for the opposition. So they're very aggressive around the contact area. You know, like if you look at our Munster game in particular, like we weren't accurate enough in that area and Munster came very aggressive at us in that area. So that's a clear point from that game that we can get better at. But yeah, you see some of the threat they have as well. Good kicking game, as you'd expect with Ronan leading the charge there in terms of the coaching ticket. You know, so understands what it takes to win at this level because he's so much experience himself. You know, Jono the same, very much the same. So whether it's time in Leinster or his time in Claremont as well. So he has a ton of experience in the competition. So with that experience comes lots of different learnings along the way, both positive and negative. And you learn quite often a lot more from some of the negative experiences. So, but yeah, we're deep into the tournament. So you're going to be coming up against top teams.
Leo Cullen there speaking ahead of Leinster's clash against La Rochelle. And Donica, it should be a good one, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, like he's been nice about John O'Gibbs and Ron O'Gara, but there will be fireworks on Sunday. I really can't wait for it. I suppose there is the emotional involvement from people around because it's Ron O'Gara's team and everyone wants him to do well. But with Leinster, you know, making 12 changes and having such competition, Marie, I think, you know, it's going to be incredible. We got the Leinster team today, Hugo Keenan, Jordan Larmour and James Lower in the back three. And then you consider you're leaving out someone like Dave Kearney, who's been in incredible form. And that's what you want. You want competition for places. Gary Ringrose did enough last week to join Robbie Henshaw in the centres. An interesting one for me, Luke McGrath captains aside with Ross Byrne, who's making his 100th cap. And Marie, it's amazing that landmark moments like that really count. They really matter. You know, making sure that Ross has a big day and that it's special. You know, you know you're going to get buy-in. Front row, Keane Healy, Ronan Keller, Tyke Furlong, and then in the engine room, James Ryan and Devin Toner, and then the back row of Reese Ruddock, Jack Conan and Josh van der Fleer, who for me is a bit of a bolter. I think if he put in a massive performance, and you heard Leo address it there, he called it the contact area, take all the edges off it. He's chatting about rooks, and that's what Josh van der Fleer will give you. He will light up every breakdown and he'll be at every breakdown. So it really is a big one.
I think
one.
Your voice is gone. Does that mean now you can't shout for Leinster over the weekend?
Do you know what my voice is gone for? It was my first night back at athletics and I was so enthused.
You got carried away.
I was full of encouragement, but it was lashing rain and I was just
So you were shouting run faster at the top of your voice into
absolutely.
The rain.
Absolutely. Apologies about my voice, but I really am excited about this Leinster-La Rochelle game.
Are they evenly matched, do you think?
They're not matched on history and pedigree and where it really counts. And Rod said that in his article today in the Irish Examiner. You know, like, Sunday will be the biggest day in La Rochelle's history as a club. So whereas, you know, it's what we expect with Leinster, them being at the business end. But what do we learn with Johnny Wilkinson in Toulon? That you get a right group of players, you get a coach in charge that cares about people and you can create history. And I think that's what, you know, Ronan's going to look to do this weekend. I hope we get a belter of a game. I really do. I think you know better than anyone, semi-finals can be boring enough, but hopefully this is a great one as well. Ulster underway tonight, that's a massive game as well, so hopefully Ulster will get us off to a good start.
Yep, and another really brilliant weekend of sport. And just one more question on Leinster, Donica, because you've obviously watched a lot of them over the last while. Are there chinks?
I think there might be chinks, but it's how quickly they fix them. And Leo, like, it's amazing how much you actually hear in a press conference if you're really listening. And what he's saying there is the breakdown was nowhere good enough in the Rainbow Cup game against Munster. And he's identified that. And you mentioned him last night, the La Rochelle players, the likes of Aldred, Skelton, Vito. They're
big lads.
Yeah, but they're big and they're menacing at the breakdown. And Leinster have to get that right. So that's the game. And that's why I'm saying Josh van der Fleer, you'll see him in his red cap bombing around the place. It's nearly harsh to say, but if he can have such an influence on the game, he really could put it Leinster's way. So it'll be interesting to see.
Really well. We do have a mouth-watering weekend of sport ahead. And just before we take a break, it was announced just before we come on air that the IRFU have confirmed that the planned trip to Fiji, their tour, cannot take place because of the uncertainty caused by the COVID outbreak. They have worked closely with the Fijian rugby and World Rugby. Unfortunately, it looks like it is not going to be able to happen. So it'll be disappointing for everybody involved there.
It will, of course. And we understand the way the world is at the moment, that's not viable or able to happen. But what we have to remember is we have to look after nations like Fiji. It is so important for the development of the game that, you know, that we get tours out there. So hopefully this can be rescheduled and put in the time that when it'll work, because Fiji have given so much to World Rugby. They deserve, you know, their people deserve to have top quality games at home.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to take a very quick break. Before we do, there are two games underway in the League of Ireland Premier Division, Drogheda United and Sligo Rovers, with Drogheda United leading 1-0 there, 33 minutes gone, and it is scoreless between St Patrick's Athletic and Longford Town.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So the Republic of Ireland women's team will face Sweden, Finland, Slovakia and Georgia in their World Cup 2023 qualifiers after this afternoon's draw. We are joined on the line now by RTÉ's soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue. Tony, what is your reaction to this draw?
I think it's a tough draw, but it could have been tougher. I suppose when you get these draws, you always think it could have been worse. And to be fair, you know, out of the top seed, you were wondering, were we going to get the Netherlands or Germany again? And we got Sweden. I suppose their ranking is fifth. They're one of the top three teams in Europe. They are going to the Olympics. A huge tradition in women's football, so that will be tough. But look, the top seed was always going to be tough, and realistically we were looking at, as we have been in the last number of qualifiers, looking at trying to snatch the second place and the playoff place from the team ranked as the second seed, because we're a third seed, of course. So we got Finland. They're ranked 24th. They're a decent side, but I think this is an achievable goal for this particular group of Irish players. I think that they've learnt as they've gone along. They've been unlucky. They've not helped themselves at times. Mistakes. Vera Powell talks about it again even today. They say you make your own luck, and they've had very little of it in the last couple of qualifying campaigns. So Finland, I think, are a target certainly for us, and you know, second place is a realistic objective. After that, we have Slovakia, who we've met in the last two World Cup qualifying campaigns, and Georgia, who are ranked 125th or 6th. Well, we're so used to Georgia in the men's games, aren't we? So I suppose it was inevitable that we were going to get them in the women's as well.
I just realised, by the way,
sorry, I just realised I didn't turn off the telly there. I was watching St. Pat's and Longford on Watch LOI, so I hope that hasn't come across, because I'm trying to keep an eye on that as well. But from the women's point of view, yeah, it is tough, there's no question, but I think it could have been tougher.
Okay, well, you did go out to FAI HQ today and caught up with the Republic of Ireland women's manager Vera Powell. Let's hear it.
It's a tough group, of course. You've seen that we have drawn Sweden as top country. They go to the Olympics, so they're part of the best three of Europe at this moment. And that means that's one of those games that you need, those countries that you really need to try to do everything that you can. And we faced that with Germany in the last time. But then we have Finland in the second pot, and that is a game that we can play. So we've set the fixtures now. It was a bit difficult because countries are getting more and more keen to get their own way and don't give in. But we think that we've done it in a way that we can have a good result.
Realistically, you're probably trying to look at a second place and a playoff. The playoff is quite convoluted this time, and it does seem to reflect your rankings. Is it fair, do you think?
the playoff system.
Yes.
Yeah, it is the way that they have done it is that only the second will go into playoffs. So you will get the same thing as in all the other qualification campaigns, that the pot two and three, they're competing against each other, and it's always about the second game of those fixtures. And we were forced to have an away game again against Finland. But if we wouldn't have done that, they would have two games against Sweden after our game. So we were forced to do that. And, we will prepare. On the other hand, before our game against Sweden, we have no other fixture, so we can prepare for a week and a half. So it's give and take. And I think that we have a quite balanced program at this moment.
Finland will be the team that you'll be targeting, I suppose, the most in those games. How would you rate them at the moment?
Yeah, they are ranked higher than us, and they are going to the Euros. They've been at the Euros, they've hosted the Euros. So they are further, they're more mature than we are, but we are growing every game. So we really have the feeling that we can get close to them, and then we must have our best day ever.
And it's interesting to see that Slovakia and Georgia are our other opponents. So Slovakia, we've met them in the last two World Cup campaigns,
yeah.
So they won't hold out too many fears for us.
No, on the other hand, we need to realise also that especially Slovakia has grown a lot recently, because they've had a lot of activities. They started with pro football over there. So it's not to underestimate, but we ranked higher and we should be able to win those games.
It was mentioned even during the draw, the success of Northern Ireland in making it to the European Championships. That was something of an inspiration. Is that something that you can help inspire your girls for this journey?
Yes, of course. And we know that if we don't make the mistakes that we've made, and that's all individual mistakes, if we get them out of our game, and of course you always have one or two, but not in the way that every single goal against is an individual mistake, then we have a huge chance to qualify, because let's be honest, then we would have qualified now also, and that is very difficult to take it out. But if you see in the games against Denmark and Belgium, and also there it was individual mistakes, but if you see how we grow in the game, then I'm so confident that that will be out of our play by the time we start the qualifying campaign.
Is it an advantage for you to have been drawn in a 5-team group rather than a 6-team group, do you think?
It's always hard to say. The benefit is that we have two windows that we can prepare for a week and a half. That's the benefit. And we don't have to use the friendly slots in February and in June. So, I think it is. I think it is a benefit, yes.
And finally, looking ahead to Australia and New Zealand, I mean, what it would mean for Irish football to finally qualify for the finals, to make it to a tournament?
We cannot underestimate what that does, because it will be huge. It will be so big. We cannot imagine how big that will be if we would qualify, because it's the biggest event for women in the world by far. And the moment every country, the moment that you qualify, everything changes in a country. So we know that pressure. We know that we're onto it, but that is why we're top players, top sport people, and that's also what we love.
Now, Republic of Ireland women's manager Vera Powell speaking to our own Tony O'Donoghue, who is with us on the line. But before I get to you, Tony, Sligo Rovers have equalised against Drogheda. It's heading for half time now. But Tony, listening to Vera there, and she's right, when a team, a country gets to a major tournament, everything changes. And when you think about the mistakes that you spoke about there, the missteps, there'll be regrets. They're going to have learned an awful lot from those Euro qualifiers, but they really need to make up that ground now in these World Cup qualifiers.
In a way, I think we need to stop talking about those mistakes and make them bigger than they were, although they were huge, they were hugely significant, and they were the reason ultimately that we didn't qualify. But, you know, we've mentioned this before on the show, Northern Ireland's achievement was referred to by the UEFA people making the draw today. They called it a sensational achievement. They proved, they said, that you can make the impossible possible. And, you know, if they can do it, Well, we can do it, and that's surely the way you've got to look at this next campaign. Although there's a record 51 countries from the UEFA region split into the nine groups. It's probably a benefit, I think, to be one of just the three groups of five, because that'll give Vera more time to either play friendlies or to have more time in the windows with the team to prepare them. The fixtures haven't been confirmed, and there was a long time before we got a chance to talk to Vera today, because straight after the draw, it was an old-fashioned kind of roll the sleeves up and go into a big negotiating session with the other countries in order to try and hammer out your fixtures. If they couldn't come to an agreement there, it would revert back to UEFA, who would just put them in a draw, but that draw usually favoured the higher seeds. So it looks like Ireland will start their campaign a bit like this happened a couple of times with the men, away to Georgia in Tbilisi. That's in September coming up. So it's going to come up quite soon. It'll start next September. 12 months later, it'll be done, and a World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. And having been at the latter stages of the last World Cup in France, and to see how well attended it was and how well organised it was and how good the football was, women's football is just getting bigger and better. And to be a part of it, as Vera said, would be an absolute game changer. In October, the next Republic of Ireland game should be at home to Slovakia, a double header indeed, followed by home to Finland. So if you can bank points away in Georgia, which you should, and then home to Slovakia, and the big one will be the third game, home to Finland, well then you're in very good shape coming up to our home game against Sweden. Those fixtures aren't entirely confirmed as of yet, but you know, it's certainly doable. I definitely think Europe is where the power is in world football. Nadine Kessler made that point. She said 7 of the 8 quarterfinalists in 2019 in France were from Europe. Obviously USA won it, but Europe, 55% of the players are playing their club football in Europe now, and there's a huge desire, she said, to break the glass ceiling. So it'll be interesting if a European side could win it, because America, of course, have proven to be very, very strong. But far more importantly, from our point of view, to qualify for a finals, a major tournament finals, for the very first time would absolutely change everything, I think.
Tony, not only a quality coach, Vera Powell, but able to negotiate good deals when it comes to scheduling. and that's going to be important for us. She said it before, getting preparation time is key for her.
Yeah, and you know, she the statistic that came about, she had so few sessions really with the girls. Now look, you know, as well as the mistakes that we've been harping on about, you know, you had the pandemic and all to go with that as well. So hopefully, can we even imagine that by next September that we might have, or October from an Irish point of view, when the Republic of Ireland plays Slovakia, that we'll have crowds back again? You'd like to think so. And that the whole thing will be a little bit more normalised. And as you say, Vera will have more time to imprint her point of view. She had the home-based players working this week up at the FAI headquarters in Abbottstown, and they'll be more and more important as well. She was making the point that they really are coming on. They're learning a lot. And that's what you get. That's the theory, the coaching theory, the best to play with the best. And if it means the 17s and the 19s coming up and practicing with the senior girls as well, that will get the best out of them. And she even made the point that the seniors have to look around, and she really believes that this is a rising tide and it will lift all the boats.
Fergal Brennan and Alan Cawley are also with us. Fergal, just to you first, and Tony mentioned it there, that 7 of the 8 quarter-finalists at the European World Cup were European, and it was almost 8 really when you look at Spain's game. They nearly got there as well. It's important really to highlight just how competitive it is going to be to qualify for a World Cup.
The disappointment of the last two qualification campaigns, particularly the last one to go to the Euros, and it was just one result away from securing a place there. That frustration, that missing out, particularly when you get so far in a qualification campaign, can be damaging to confidence and to the players. And as Vera said, she is confident that the players can react to those setbacks and to the negativity that comes with that. It's not the worst group, as Tony mentioned, given the fact that there could have been much more difficult games that were pulled out of the hat. But I think, again, looking ahead, the likelihood is that it is going to be a battle for second. But as you say, the experience within not just the Irish squad, within the wider game, is massively beneficial. And I think we can now look forward to planning for the possibility of a qualification, even though it wouldn't be easy.
And Alan, just before we move on to the Premier League, just a word on the Women's Champions League semi-finals. We are going to know our finalists after this weekend. It's Paris Saint-Germain are taking a 1-1 draw to Barcelona, while Bayern Munich lead 2-1 ahead of their meeting with Chelsea. Who do you think is going to advance?
So the Armoury and obviously top quality clubs involved here, but I suppose our focus is probably on Chelsea because they're the closest to us really in terms of we know an awful lot about Emma Hayes and the job that she's been doing here for such a long time. They're leading the league at the moment as well, the Women's Super League, and they're on course to do a quadruple as well, although even listening to her quotes during the week there about this game, Marie, she's trying to just take one game at a time and prepare properly in terms of the normal preparation that they will go through even for a league game or a cup game, that they don't want to make it down as any kind of special occasion, that it's just like a normal game. But that's all good and well saying that, but it's difficult then for players because it's so big, and obviously playing against Bayern Munich and what's at stake as well. But I think the fact they got the away goal, Marie, obviously Bayern Munich coming over now to play Chelsea on Sunday, I think they're in a good position to possibly go through, and it would be great because Emma Hayes has been leading the way certainly in women's football for a number of years now, and she's a fantastic coach, so it would be brilliant for her and for Chelsea. The other one is very tight, Paris Saint-Germain and Barcelona 1-1. I would probably go with the French team there, to be honest with you, Marie, but I suppose we're looking at the Chelsea side of things.
That's for sure. Now, in the two early kickoffs, it is 1-1 in the Drogheda United Sligo Rovers game that kicked off at 5:45 halftime there. Tony, what about your game? Are you still having it on the telly? Do you?
Well, they've gone to game week seven highlights now. Nil all. I haven't been able to keep too much of an eye on it. Longford seemed to kind of grow into it. You'd have expected Pat's top of the table, of course, and flying to maybe roll over at Longford. But as the game went on and Longford could see there wasn't as much of the teeth in the St. Pat's attack as they might have expected. So I think they'll be well happy going in nil all at halftime.
St. Patrick's Athletic are really impressing everyone, Tony, this season. Just the way that they have started, they seem to have that bite about them that they didn't have before. They're scoring goals and they have that consistency that people were calling for before the season started.
Yeah, and you'd have to say Stephen O'Donnell deserves great credit, and Alan Matthews as well. They've got a shape now, and I think they've actually done a lot from taken from the Dundalk playbook, if you like, because the likes of Robbie Benson, who would have known Stephen O'Donnell really well, has made a big impact there, I have to say. So the shape is good, and Billy King up top is looking really well as well. So yeah, it's been a good start for them, but as I say, they have to continue that, and the next 45 minutes will tell a lot.
That's for sure. There are three other games, Bowes and Derry City, Finn Harps and Shamrock Rovers and Waterford and Dundalk, and they are all kicking off at 7:45. And Alan Colley, you're heading to Bowes and Derry City, I believe?
Yeah, I'm heading into Daly Mount, a lovely evening for it as well, Marie. And we can never be too grateful for the fact that we get in to see the game, so I'm looking forward to it. And of course, Derry had a great start with Rory Higgins kicking off his tenure last week with the win beating Sligo Rovers, so we'll be looking to follow that up. But for anybody that watched the Shamrock Rovers Bowes game on telly last week, it was probably the best game that we've seen in a long time in the league, probably going back to the Shamrock Rovers Dundalk 3-2 game last year. And Bowes done everything bar Wimmery. They were absolutely brilliant. So if they perform anything like they did last week, I think they'll get 3 points against Derry.
Yeah, I think actually all games will be quite interesting tonight. It does feel like there's quite a lot at stake. Fergal, last night's Manchester United and Roma semi-final, 6-2 win for Manchester United, but it's been quite an interesting, there's been interesting reaction to it really, because a lot of the conversation seems to be focused on the fact that it was a little bit disappointing when you compared it to the game the night before between PSG and Man City. And the way I look at it is, if your team goes out and scores 6 goals and heads very closely to getting into a Europa League final, you should be happy with that.
Yeah, I think that might be slightly greedy, Manchester United fans. 6 goals and half a foot in the final and they're still not happy. Yeah, I think obviously in terms of drama and interest, the Man City game against PSG, the first half was like a chess match, and City seemed to be a little bit on the ropes. They couldn't really get a grip on the game, and you thought PSG's kind of superstar power would be enough to see them through. Guardiola did very well to reshuffle things and refocus his players at half-time. They then went back out and put in arguably the best 45 minutes we've seen from them in some time. And then last night, United against Roma was a very different situation. Again, I think half-time was key. United went in 2-1 down, very bizarre situation with Roma having to make three subs before the break because of injuries. But whatever the message from Solskjaer was at half-time seemed to ring through to the players, and they just powered on and powered on. And even when it got to three or four or even five, you could just see that hunger of let's get more, not just to kind of tick the tie off to say the second leg's now essentially a bit of a formality, but to show that we can score these goals and that we deserve to be in the final and arguably go on and win it.
Alan Colley, are you one of these angry, unhappy Manchester United fans?
I thought it was dreadful, Marie. I really did.
There you go.
Yeah, wow.
He's angry.
Honestly, I did. I thought it was dreadful. A Europa League Cup semi-final, and what's at stake, and in terms of the level that you're talking about, and the goals that were conceded, the sloppiness in play, the chasm in difference from what we watched on Wednesday night. And I know, obviously, the Champions League is the elite. It's the best of the best and the cream of the crop, and that's what we had on Wednesday night. And I'm not comparing. It's a lesser competition. But people are arguing to me that Man United are getting close to Man City and PSG and the likes. I can't see that, Marie. And certainly from what I've seen last night, they were very good in the fact that they scored the six goals and you can only beat what's in front of them. But I thought Roma were an absolute disgrace last night. As I say, Europa League semi-final. You look at the other one, Villarreal and Arsenal as well. Two very, very ordinary teams, poor teams, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't look too fondly on the Europa League in terms of is it any closer to Man United getting to the top boys and the big boys? I still think there's a bit to go.
What about the Europa Conference then, Alan, next season?
Well, Tony, we just have to take what we get him. but no, just in terms of, like, Roman, you speak about Italian football and what they were great at in terms of their defensive structure and quality. Last night, the goals that were given away and what they were conceding, I thought it was absolutely awful, the standard.
Tony, just on it, because it has been a brilliant weekend with Chelsea on Tuesday, Man City on Wednesday, and then, you know, I found it a good game to watch. Is there room for, say, maybe a league format in Europe where you could have these super teams just going to throw it out there, get them all to play against each other?
All the time, week after week, yeah. What do we call it?
I've no idea, but we'll definitely get rid of relegation and all the owners will be really happy.
Oh, you know what? I'd love to get rid of relegation. I think, Donica, you'll be interested in this. I'm not working tonight because I've been editing the piece for the 6 o'clock news for the Women's World Cup draw. And thanks to Niall O'Driscoll of Bray Wanderers, he's sent me the COVID form and I'm heading to the Carlisle grounds just to bring my rosary beads and hope that Cork City can do something against Bray Wanderers a little later on, because oh, you and I know, Donica, it's not been easy. In fact, it's been hard.
God, I've no happy fans on the call at the moment.
But you see, fans don't have to be happy. Fans like grumbling, I think.
They do, and I'm giving you too much space.
Don't forget, my other team is Tottenham Hotspur, so there you go.
Yeah, there's no hope for you at all, Tony.
Marie, when I lived in Sheffield, it used to be a phone-in after the match, and at 5:15, I don't know if they still do it, but it was the most famous phone I'd ever come across. It was called Praise or Grumble. And basically, they'd ring up and some fella'd say, oh, who am I speaking to? Now, I'm speaking to Tommy. And is it a praise or a grumble? It's a grumble. So
we could start doing that here on this show. But Fergal, like, what do you think will make the Manchester United fans happy? If they go out and defeat the champions at the weekend, would that be enough, do you think?
It'd be a step in the right direction. It might cheer Alan up anyway, at least. But I think given the way United have played this season and given the fact that fans have been demanding a bit of tangible progress under Solskjaer, a trophy in his hand or a better performance from last season, all of those boxes are being ticked. They're on track to finish as high as they've ever finished since he's come into the club as manager. They're on track to probably win a trophy. I think they're the favourites now to win the Europa based on the two games last night. And yeah, it's a difficult one to gauge because the distance between everybody and Manchester City in the Premier League is so big at the minute. But if United can finish best of the rest and demonstrate that in the last 12 months they've been comfortably better than Liverpool or Leicester or Chelsea or anyone like that, it is an achievement. But ultimately, I still think fans, when they look forward to the final month or final month and a half of a season, they want a trophy. And that's what a big portion of the performance was about last night. I do agree with Alan that as a game it was a bit of a joke in patches, but they want that trophy. The players want that trophy. There's quite a few players in that United team who've never won anything as a United player, and they know that now they are within touching distance of doing that, all under the guidance of Solskjaer.
And Alan, just if you were to look to the transfer window, and you're talking about trying to close the gap against a team that were going for a quadruple not so long ago, and the treble is still on for them, what do they need to do then?
Yeah, and to be fair, Marie, we've discussed this a lot, and I know I've been critical of Solskjaer United, but I would agree with everything that Fergal said there in terms of he is ticking the boxes and he can do no more. They are in second. They are closing the gap slightly in terms of points. I would argue are they closing it when you look at the actual teams, the way they play and all. I'm not so sure. Now, people would say, oh, well, Man United played Man City and they beat them and all. They can beat them in a one-off game, but I'm just talking about the absolute quality of what we see with Man City week in, week out. Man United, I don't think, are at that level yet. But they're getting there, I suppose. But as you say, the key thing now will be the recruitment in the summer. And they're probably only a player or two away, Marie, but you're talking a superstar, or maybe a Harry Kane or someone like that. We've seen Cavani has been great for them, but obviously he's coming towards the latter part, 4 or 5 years ago. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in the transfer market. But I've not really been critical of Solskjaer and Man United last night. To be fair, they did everything that they had to do when they won and they scored 6 goals and they did well. I'm just talking about the general standard of a Europa League semi-final. I thought it was awful compared to... And I know, as I say, Wednesday night is the cream of the crop. But I would be expecting a little bit more from a Europa League semi-final.
And Tony, with that in mind, it will be quite interesting to see what kind of a game Manchester United and Liverpool throw up on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool fans will tell you that this isn't a proper season, and you can't make any judgment on the basis of what we've seen. But Manchester United, I think, have, to be fair, under Solskjaer, improved. When you're talking about how far away they are from Man City, look how far everyone else is away from Man City. If you're looking at the evidence of this week, PSG, aren't at the same level.
I think, Tony, to be fair, I think if Liverpool had their full complement of players, I don't think they're too far away from Man City, and I think they're still a good bit ahead of United. I also look at Chelsea and what Tuchel has done since he's come in. I actually think they're ahead of United as well. But they're going to be a lot.
They weren't under Lampard.
No, but I'm saying Tuchel, since he's come in, and the squad of players that they have, so I think they're only going to get stronger as well. And you look at how well they're finishing the season. And I think next year, you're looking at United now, and people saying they're second to Man City. It wouldn't surprise me if they were maybe fourth next year, because I think you're going to have a very strong Chelsea, you're going to have a very strong Liverpool, Man City. So it'll be very, very competitive come next season.
And I don't think any assessment of the season, though, I mean, I made something of a joke regarding Liverpool fans, but I do think it has been an extraordinary time, and football without fans, and the pandemic in general, and the utter exhaustion of the players. I mean, that's a point that has been made, in fairness, by Pep and by Klopp, and by many, many people. You know, the Champions League has changed in the last couple of weeks. Almost, I keep thinking that the European Super League was a Trojan horse, because we've now got 100 extra games. When are the players going to rest? You cannot see the best football from the best players if you're flogging them to death twice a week, every week.
You just have to hope maybe those pre-season tours around the world might stop this year, and that they do get a bit of a break. Right, we need a break after that, a very quick one. And then we are going to be back to talk about Katie Taylor's upcoming fight. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So those early kickoffs in the League of Ireland have just got back underway. Drogheda United and Sligo Rovers 1-1 there. And St Patrick's Athletic Longford Town is 0-0. Also, if anyone's interested in the rugby, Ulster versus Leicester is live on Radio 1 Extra from 8 p.m. with Michael Corcoran and Donal Lenehan. It is time to turn our attention to Katie Taylor. And I have to say, of everything that is on this weekend, the thing I'm looking forward to most is the Katie Taylor, Natasha Jonas rematch. And I'm delighted to say that Gavin Casey from the 42 is with us to talk us through it. Gavin, am I too excited about it?
She's not into line of duty, Gavin.
I was going to say, Donick could probably kill me, but I'm in the similar boat to yourself, Marie. I'm absolute tunnel vision towards this fight, and I actually forgot about Ulster. I forgot they're kicking off in 10 minutes' time. I was about to order a Chinese, but I postpone it. I think you're spot on. It's a fight that's been probably... I know a lot of people are calling it 9 years in the making. It's probably not a fair representation of reality, like in the sense that Jonas had been retired for... 5 years after they last met in London 2012 at the Olympics. Katie Taylor beat her in a quarterfinal there and went on to win, obviously, gold, as everybody remembers. What kind of, I guess, inspired Jonas to join her in the professional ranks was the fact that Taylor was there in the first place. And she probably observed Taylor doing extremely well over the course of the first, 7-8 months of her career, and reckoned, you know what, I might take a slice of that action, and particularly the money that Katie started to make as well, and that's gone up and up in the intervening years. And the fight at one point did seem lost. Early in Jonas's professional career, she got stopped spectacularly by Vivian Obenauf, who Taylor had fairly comprehensively beaten in only her third professional fight. So it felt as though this fight that had been built up and pretty much the raison d'etre for Jonas's professional venture, that was going to be this massive event at Sky Sports, had just completely disappeared and would not be a realistic proposition. But Jonas has reinvented her career with this really, really accomplished display against Terry Harper, a super featherweight world championship fight last year, her fellow Briton. And suddenly it's back on and it's bigger than ever.
Gavin, just on it, we've seen Katie move around in weights, but they weighed in today. She's 135 in pounds, just under it, is it? But she looks in phenomenal condition, doesn't she?
I think it's the best condition she's ever been in, Donegal. I was actually only chatting to Joe O'Neill from IrishBoxing.com, a colleague, and he, I trust Joe's judgment on these things. He literally, 5 minutes before I took this call, we were talking about the fact we don't think we've seen her in, as ripped a condition as this. And she's never had a problem making lightweight. She's actually probably not the biggest natural lightweight. She doesn't reckon she can get back down to super feather anytime soon. I'd probably argue that, but she is happier at 135. But Jonas as well, Donegal, she's coming up from super feather. And it's a 5 pound jump. It's not the end of the world. It's not a massive deal. But you'd imagine, generally speaking, the person coming up in weight would be ceding a little bit of a size advantage. And it doesn't seem to be the case. I think Jonas is probably herself a natural lightweight like Taylor. She, as you mentioned, weighed in only an ounce lighter. And speaking to her during the week, it was interesting in terms of the science and the various percentages and things that you'd have a better understanding of. Your time as a rugby player, I don't really look at my body mass index or my body fat percentage, but Jonas was making the point that hers was actually lower. Her body fat percentage was lower, despite the fact that she's tacked on these 5 pounds. So she looks ready to go as well.
Yeah,
what is she? Did she say body fat?
She didn't say. And
no,
I was
just reading Rhys McClenaghan, the gymnast, said this week that he was at 6%.
Ooh,
so 6%. That's the only reason
I'm
curious. And that's a gymnast heading off to an Olympic Games.
But that's the gold you're chatting about there, Gav. It's how much power, how heavy you can be with as lean as possible. And obviously she's excited about that. Does she bring a threat, though, to Katie in the fact that she's a southpaw and, she has that power?
You know what, I was asking Katie this. We got one question each on the presser during the week, and there was only one. And because there were 55-odd reporters/journalists on it, we were limited to a single question. I mean, first and foremost, that's a great thing. She actually had more people on her call, Taylor did, than, say, Derek Chisora, who's in the headliner this weekend, British heavyweight. So it shows the media interest over there. I kind of wasted my question because I asked her, how did that change your preparation, the fact that she is a southpaw? Taylor's only fought one southpaw before as a professional. Now, needless to say, she's come across plenty of them in her glittering amateur career as well. But her answer was basically that it changed nothing. And the only thing that she changed in preparation was her sparring partners. And I guess going back to that amateur career, the fact that she's seen so many southpaws throughout that, she knows kind of what she's up against. I mean, after all, she has fought Jonas twice and beaten her twice as an amateur. It's a different kettle of fish this time around, different scoring system to what they would have been accustomed to back then as well. But in terms of what Jonas can offer it by way of threat as a lefty, she has a nice 1-2 combination. She throws this really nice combination, which is a left hook that she follows up with a kind of a sweeping right hook. And it caught Terry Harper by surprise a couple of times last year and actually rocked her. But Taylor is just so much more seasoned than Harper. And I was making the point during the week on a thing we were doing with the 42 that I think Jonas will have to have worked on a couple of wrinkles, a couple of new things in training camp, and in order to be able to spring a surprise, because I do believe Taylor is prepared for everything we've seen Jonas produce so far, both as an amateur and as a pro.
St. Patrick's Athletic are now 2-0 up against Longford Town. 2 goals there in very quick succession. So before we move on to the other fights, Gav, call this one for us.
I'm expecting Taylor to do something a little bit special. It's been 2 years, I think, since she's had a stoppage, and I wouldn't be shocked if she produces a lot. I think Jonas is capable of winning a couple of rounds. I think it'll be an entertaining, high-octane fight, but Grace usually beats very good, and Katie Taylor is a great fighter, and Natasha Jonas is a very good fighter.
So, you know I love a bit of drama. Everyone knows I love a bit of drama. And just before we came on air, I was reading that Derek Chisora and his team have packed up their belongings into boxes inside the bubble, and he's adamant that he will not fight if he has to make his ring walk first. Joseph Parker won the coin toss and chose to walk second. So what's the latest?
I think the latest is that they're probably struggling to ship this pay-per-view, to be totally honest. It's interesting that they're... this controversy has been kind of concocted one way or the other on the eve at the 11th hour. Like the latest is basically, as you've laid out there, Marie, to my knowledge at least, but it's so unrealistic to think that Chisora won't actually emerge from the dressing room tomorrow. I mean, the refunds, the hassle, the fact he'll be himself out of pocket, and it'll be pretty much an international sporting disgrace for the most innocuous of things. I can't see it not happening. I don't know how you settle it. Maybe they... I think, actually, they did flip a coin. That's where the issue was earlier. And Chisora lost that coin toss. Maybe go best of three. That'd be my solution.
Yeah, paper, scissors, rock sorts everything out. Yeah. They should lift them at it with the gloves. Just on it, there is Irish interest beyond Katie, Belfast Tennyson. Can you tell us a bit about him?
I can tell people listening to... If they have the spare few bob for the pay-per-view, to tune in and watch him is the first thing I'd say, because he's an unbelievably entertaining fighter. His sister actually was the captain of the Antrim footballers last year. He obviously comes from a great sporting family. There's a lot of athleticism in there, and he punches like a mule kicks, I suppose. He just has this propulsion in his shots. You talked earlier about the amount of power you can kind of pack into as small a frame as possible, Dunica, and like, this guy is like a mini Gennady Golovkin at times. He's on the fringes now of challenging for the four recognised world titles. He's fighting for a minor world title tomorrow night. He kind of is calling it a world title fight, and listen, good luck to him. He's worked hard for this opportunity. He'll get a belt if he wins against his Mexican opponent, and it'll also open doors, hopefully, for bigger nights for him. But a really down-to-earth fella, nice guy, nice personality, super fighter to watch.
And Gav, Michael Conlon is also in action.
Yeah, that's on in about, an hour and a half time on BT Sport. He's fighting against a guy called Yanut Baluta, who has taken two massive Irish scalps in recent times, particularly against former world champion TJ Doheny from Port Laoise. Now, TJ would admit himself he stunk the gaff out that night. He just really underperformed. He felt... I don't think he was necessarily overconfident, but it was a tricky match for him, and maybe he was a little bit undercooked, as I say. And then Baluta knocked out Davy Oliver Joyce, which was less of a surprise. So this is teed up nicely for Conlon. He's moving back down to, or he's moving down to super bantamweight under the limit for the first time. He's going to be campaigning there in search of a world title. And this would be a good win, maybe even a signature win in his professional career so far against a tricky customer. I expect he'll do it. I expect he'll probably have some difficulty on his way, but he's a better fighter. Look, we're talking Katie Taylor against Jonas, and Taylor has this incredible pedigree. Conlon is very similar. Baluta, tough guy, never been dropped, never been stopped. But I reckon Conlon, if he's on his game, might change that tonight.
Right, Gavin Casey of The 42, thanks so much for joining us. I think everyone will be sitting on the couch for the weekend because there is so much on. That is all we have time for. Thanks to Ronan and Laura Lee and all our team during the week. Blana Tracy is up next.